Inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast.
Nick Solacek, you're back on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's good to have you back. I think the last time you were on my show was like 3 years ago. We were in your studio apartment, and so much has changed for you and for me in that time. And I want to get into what's changed in your life because I think it's pretty inspiring. The last episode we did was really inspiring. You were talking about how to make changes in your life, how to drive forward in a good way, how to control the things that you can control and take steps. And the steps you've taken have been immense. And I want people to know that the overarching subject of this episode is going to be men's work. We're going to talk about why men's work, why you and I are so involved in that, why that's this sort of central pillar of our friendship and our relationship, what men's work is, and some key concepts like integration, alchemy, shadow work. What's the significance of your relationship with your father in men's work, things like that. So really stoked to have this conversation with you. When I was thinking about covering those subjects and I thought about who did I want to have on the show, it's you. Like you're the number one guy. Like we've had countless saunas and one-on-one conversations where we're processing our own shit or something that's going on around us, some relationship with someone else. And we've learned so much in that process. And I'm just honored to do this again with you, to drop in with you and to share a conversation that in most cases would be private. You know, one of the things I love about podcasting is that you essentially have a more realistic, like sort of private conversation in public. You know, there's an authenticity to it. So I'm not going to diatribe. Thanks for coming on the show, man. And I'm happy to have you here.
Yeah, I think since the last time we spoke, this podcast and your brand has become, well, something. And I think when you started out, a lot of people knew it was going to be great and they had a lot of respect for you and just who you are as a person and what you've been through. And what I mean is that over the last 3 years, since I was last here, I believe, you know, about mm-hmm. that time, mm-hmm. you've had some experts in their field, some very intelligent, very well-respected people on here. So it's amazing to be here with you and appreciate the big introduction. The
yeah.
High praise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and extra background there is that my first men's group that I joined was your men's group. You were part of this thing called Samurai Brotherhood, and they had one squad that had grown and it was too big for the original space. And it was time for squad number 2 and 3 and 4 to split off. And you were one of those guys who took the early lead. And I went to an open house, and I've told this story on many other shows around, you know, just sitting in that circle and feeling this sort of electricity in the room. In a sort of a men's only space where guys are there to they're there to level up. They're not there to peacock or to share business contacts or network. Like they're there to work on themselves, find their edge and ride that in and be witnessed and held in that by other men. So there was this nervousness in there. It was really exciting. Anyways, I joined and, our group, along with my new girlfriend at the time, were lighting my ass up to start a podcast and start this brand and start, you know, coaching and sharing more and having conversations like this live. And so you and those original men are the reason you and I are sitting here right now, yeah. You know, so it's pretty cool to me, kind of great thing to reflect on. Hmm. So at that time, and I think, I don't know, it was 5 or 6 years ago, right? At that time, you were in the music business and, you know, you were developing a certain level of ability to lead and in your own life, still sort of making strides towards really living in your purpose. And I would say when you came on the show, you had made a lot of progress in that respect, and you still had some leaps ahead of you in terms of really stepping into working for yourself and really only doing the work that is your highest calling. So if you could share a little bit about that journey and what's changed just in the last 3 years in your life and what you've done and how that happened.
Well, a lot's changed, and probably as a result of being in men's work. You know, I attribute a lot of the growth and changes that I've made to my experience in those squads. You know, leading them is an interesting position as a facilitator. But for me, the integrated man is the name of your course, your online course you just launched. And I think the word integrity is really important. And I think that's a big part of my experience and at least part of my value set, in that if I say I'm going to do something, that, you know, I follow through on that and my actions match my words. And I think leading a group like that really challenged me to be accountable and to practice what I preach, and to not challenge or ask something, you know, of somebody, or encourage somebody to do something that I wouldn't be willing to do myself, like encouraging a guy to follow what he thinks is his purpose, mm-hmm. or to really, you know, engage in life by expressing himself creatively or being involved in his passions or whatever that might look like. So that set me up for a really powerful trajectory, and my men's work journey started 6 years ago. And so in terms of what's happened for me, well, you know, as I identify right now, I'm a coach and couples therapist, and that's what I do full time. When we spoke last, I was in sales. I was at a job that I hated, and I hadn't really set up my coaching practice yet. So a lot has changed, and now doing that work has been just incredibly rewarding, working with people from around the world, men and women, couples, and people that identify differently. On their personal fulfillment, happiness, purpose, quality of relationships. And the pandemic has been a very interesting time to be doing that. So I got very lucky. I'd set up my business online. I'd been wanting to do that for a while. And then 8 months later, the pandemic hit, and I had already gotten rolling and built some momentum. And I was just extremely lucky to have that happen.
Yeah.
When some of my colleagues and friends were in sales jobs and really didn't transition out. And struggled, you know, yeah. at various points in this thing. And I know that many people share in that, whether they work in retail or they work in, you know, any industry, really. Everyone's been affected to some extent by that experience. So a lot has changed. The world has changed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I certainly feel very lucky, you know, to be in the position that I am doing the work that I'm doing, but also that it was just well-timed, whether through supernatural aid or spirit guides looking out for me or my own intuition or just luck that, you know, I'm here today. And
for sure. And, you know, when I think about what that journey was like for you, there was certainly an element of you having a fire lit under your ass by the people around you. Similar situation to me doing this thing and doing my thing with coaching and sharing the work with other men. It's like you had a few key guys in your circle who are, you know, many of them also in my circle, who started to become intolerant and impatient with how slow you were moving towards doing what you're doing now, because yeah. we could see your talent. We could see how good you were at reaching people. And, you know, we felt that was being wasted in sales. You felt that was being wasted in sales. But it's funny how, like, there's this phenomenon where men will often break promises to themselves. They're not very accountable to themselves. You know, like, we're really good at bullshitting ourselves. Like, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do it next year. Oh, I'm not ready. Or like, yeah, this is, you know, we'll say, like, we hear it coming out of our mouths. Like, yeah, I want to change this. You know, I want to, you know, I really should quit smoking cannabis every night. Or I really should quit drinking, you know, 5 nights a week. But then nothing will change. And there's something about involving other people in our lives in a bigger way than just this sort of like superficial way, you know, like where we see someone at soccer or see someone at the office, where like they're accountable. They're responsible for being deeper in our lives and in the inner circle and looking out for us in a way. And when we do that, we're handing them the rights to like step in and give us some fire about like, hey man, like, you know this, I know this, what are you doing about it? Like, it's time to take a leap and quit your job. Like, you can't coach full time if you're doing sales full time. So at some point, you gotta quit, you know? And that fire is this extra push, but it's also like a confidence, you know? Like, I can do this. Like, these people have my back. They believe in me. Maybe I need to believe them more than I believe my own thoughts that I'm not ready yet, or I'm not worthy, or that it's not gonna work, you know? Because they know.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think it's true that to some degree I have that experience. It's like, I can't even listen to myself some days because there's particular thoughts or stories that come up and you realize, you know, that's not helpful and you got to go a different direction. The, you know, whether it's right for everyone to quit their job or not is it's up to them and it's personal, it's unique, it's circumstantial. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's really powerful is that people can be encouraging you, standing there encouraging, and you might be on the edge of the cliff thinking about jumping, so to speak, into that next opportunity, taking that, you know, cliche leap. Mm-hmm. But that there's people there just encouraging you. And if you're not ready today, that they're going to be there tomorrow, mm-hmm. and they're going to be there next week. And you start to kind of get the sense that, oh, you know, maybe I can do that, mm-hmm. if you don't really believe it. If you're scared and there's fear and there's all kinds of things in your way. And that's a really powerful thing that guys get from the groups. And I think it's worth saying that when I joined men's work 6 years ago, it wasn't because I thought I had it all figured out and I was coming to teach guys or something. I mm-hmm. was struggling. I was broke. I didn't have a direction. I wasn't even working full time. And I felt really lost in my life. And when I joined the groups, when I joined the weekly meetings, I noticed something, and the guys were telling the truth about their lives. They were telling the truth about themselves. People were sharing that one guy shared he was in $250,000 of debt. One guy shared he'd never met his father. One man shared that he didn't have a life purpose and he was struggling. He wasn't really up to anything. And when people started talking this way, and I started talking that way, telling the truth and being honest about that, it really started to shift things. And part of the first thing I experienced was discomfort. I was very uncomfortable in that group telling the guys about my situation, that I wasn't working full time. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I kind of felt just lost and I was broke and had no direction. That's not really something that feels exciting to say. You don't really feel proud about that. And sometimes shame too, that you're sort of feeling like maybe I shouldn't have made certain choices, or people aren't really like me. How did I get myself into this position? And I sat in that for a while, and at first nothing really changed. But eventually I started making declarations and following through on them. I started participating in group accountability. And that's when sort of the wheels were turning and I started to build momentum in a certain direction. And at first it was just momentum in sales. At first it was just momentum in my personal health. Mm-hmm. And eventually I kept going and kept going. You're going to get around to some of the things that are not working for you if you stay with that process. And what I got around to was still my work. You know, I really was not excited to get up out of bed and to do what I was doing. And so I made that change. And I think that's a continual dance for everybody. I think it's a constant practice of seeking alignment. And sometimes you might sway or tilt in the wrong direction, or over the course of a year, you start making practical choices instead of really about what you want.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm learning a lot about that. And really, really happy that I took the leaps that I did.
Yeah, I think you really encapsulated the process of change and the real, the natural process that happens when you just sit in a circle and talk about the truth of what's happening in your life and how naturally things just start to change, you know, because when I sit in a circle and, for instance, I see a guy, he shares a little bit about his relationship, and I start giving him the feedback like, man, you're giving yourself away in this relationship. You're not speaking to what your needs are. You're saying yes when you mean no. And you, like, the truth is you really don't even want to be in this relationship. You're just afraid to be alone. And you're dragging this person through for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
And the courageous thing here is to speak the truth to her and to let go. And when I say that to him, he gets that benefit. And when I realize that I'm also doing the same thing in my relationship, I feel a fire under my own ass to change that myself, because I don't want to be a hypocrite. And if that man knows me, he'll also look at me and go like, yeah, thanks for the feedback. And you too, man. Right? I've seen that so many times. And you know, that phenomenon that I'm describing has happened in my own life in previous relationships. And I've seen it happen in so many men's lives. And there's so many other scenarios, but just that process of like speaking to things and bringing it into the circle, it gets the ball rolling and it gets change happening in a man's life. This stuff doesn't have to be, it's not like we're working magic in this process in men's work. It's actually just a very natural process. And all we have to do is like create the structure and the forum for honest, truthful conversations to happen between men. And so much changes just with that. So since you and I were sitting in that first circle, the brotherhood that we're a part of seems to have caught a wave, a rising wave of interest in this type of work. We've got 50 groups now. And as you and I have moved through our own process of learning to lead, you know, at one point I split off from the group after a year and a half and I went and started my own group within the organization. I started my own squad, we call it. And I ran that for 6 months. And then through an interesting turn of events, you and I ended up merging our squads back together and we formed a new one. Right? And we called it Tiger.
Tiger. That's right.
And Tiger's still going strong. And you know, years down the road, you moved on. And then I led Tiger on my own. And you moved up. And we needed more and more leadership in the organization. And now, essentially, the sort of end point at this point is that you and I are running the organization at the executive level. So now we're running this, like, machine that... you know, it's, in a sense, we didn't even see coming. It's just like so many guys were hungry for this in our city and even worldwide. When we started providing online groups, it's just growing and growing and growing. We started them 3 years ago and there's 16 of them now, you know? So it's amazing to see that, you know, in some ways, like you create a thing and it's good and it'll grow organically, but there's also this like element of luck or, you know, the right place at the right time, you know?
Yeah.
Like I feel like Lululemon, like right product at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, and those two things just
exploded. Yeah. The growth's been incredible. And there's a clear need for this, obviously, because we barely promote ourselves outside of posting on Instagram or running open houses here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And there's just a genuine enthusiasm for the work that we're doing there and what guys are getting out of the experience. I think it's what results do. People have a great experience and they find value in it. They're going to tell people about it. Doesn't matter if it's a clothing brand or a restaurant. They're going to say, hey, you should check this out. I had a great experience. You know, I think you're going to get something from this. And that's how I was brought in. I was invited. Someone said, I think you should check this out. You know, he believed that I would benefit from it. And that was our founder, Phil. Mm-hmm.
So I was going to ask you, and yeah, I've had Phil on the show for folks who are listening. And if you want to listen to one of Phil's episodes, just give a search for it or look on my website. I was going to ask you, like, why men's work? Like, why is this such an important part of your life? You know, like you and I both have weeks where every day of the week we see each other at some point, and it's often brotherhood related. So many meetings sometimes. Why is men's work such a big part of your life? Why are you devoting so much of your time to this thing?
In a way, I think of it as a calling, but in a sense, I feel like it's called me, that I have a sort of a duty or responsibility to be involved and to support our organization and other men just getting involved in this. Because there is something that happens, and guys experience it when they come to an open house, is a funny feeling. There's something different going on. They can't quite put a pin on it. And it's really because we spend so much time avoiding relationships with men through a whole range of tendencies for various reasons, or competing with them secretly, not so secretly, or, you know, hating them, you know, in some regard. And my experience in men's groups has just totally changed my life. I've got great relationships with men. I've got people in my phone that I can call and that are there to lend an ear, that can support me, people that I know, that I really know authentically and deeply and have great connections with. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's such a wonderful experience. When I was younger, I had a lot of female friends. I hung more with the girls in elementary, middle school, and even into high school. And I never really felt like I had a place amongst the men. Mm. And when I got involved with men's work, I really started to get to know guys that were like-minded and were open and authentic and seeking change in their life and wanting to go a little bit deeper, you know, with their own purpose, with their own relationships. And I felt like there was just a sense of belonging and a community there for me. And I didn't know that existed.
Outside of other, like, church or, you know, other clubs.
Yeah. And I was raised Catholic. And, you know, very quickly in my teenage years sort of rebelled against that, as a lot of kids do. It didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that kind of community. I didn't have that kind of church. And for me, I stopped playing team sports in high school at some point, and I became more of a video game type guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'd have my buddies online. Shout out to Doobie Dog 420 from Boise, Idaho, who, you know, we spent our whole summers playing video games. And so that's a very kind of isolated, insular type of experience. You're alone. You're kind of doing that lone wolf thing that we sometimes talk about. Mm-hmm. And I really see and feel and today just really recognize the full spectrum of benefits that I've gotten from being a part of the groups and by continuing to be a part of the groups. Because there's really something there about being better that the guys aspire to. And that's a really uplifting energy. Not that there's something wrong with me, but oh, I can be better and I can uh-huh. stay sharp and really pay attention to the direction that I'm headed in life, you know, constantly, almost on a daily basis, like we wake up physically, but being present mm-hmm. and in the moment. And obviously there's gratitude and appreciation and all those things, but just on task, like sort of having a focus, like making your life about something. Mm-hmm. And the men's work culture has just really got that. And the ice baths and the saunas and, you know, the barbecues and stuff is great.
A lot of that.
There's really something there. And I think sometimes guys use the word fire or challenge or accountability to describe that. Mm-hmm. But there's something deeper for me, which is really about safety. And any men's organization in the world, if you look at their website or hear the leader speak, they'll probably use the phrase safe space for men. Mm-hmm. And we've got a container. It's a safe container for men. And what's happening inside of that, whatever word you use to describe it, is this process of guys growing. And the reason that they're growing isn't always that people are yelling at each other or challenging each other or bringing some macho fire David Goggins energy, which is useful. It's actually that there's integrity in these spaces. There's truth. Mm-hmm. There is consistency and reliability. There's an attunement to one another.
Yeah, that is safe. That's safe.
And that's what creates an environment for men to open up mm-hmm. and for them to start taking themselves seriously and making changes in their life. Mm-hmm. I really feel that. And
yeah, that was so well said. And there's an element of safety as well in just trusting that no matter what someone says to you, there is good intent. There's love. Right. And so, you know, in my circle, sometimes when we're really trying to challenge a man on a particular thing that he's bringing, whether it's a lack of honesty or that he held something back or something like that, and we're really bringing him some challenge, the safety is in knowing that if we're bringing a level of intensity to him, that it is love, that we're not trying to hurt him or harm him or bring him down. Right. We're actually trying to lift him up. Mm. And that sort of healthy challenge, I call it, is there's not a lot of places. Right. You get that on a sports team, like what you're talking about. Right there. That's one of these beautiful places where if you have a good coach and a good team, like the life lessons that you can extract from that are many. But outside of that, there's a great lack in our culture. And so this is like, what did Thierry say the other day on the call, where it's like, it's a safe space. It's a safe space, but it's not a comfortable space, or something like that.
Mm.
I don't think you were on that call, but yeah, like there's something there around, like, it's, you know, what I said was like, it's a safe space, but not the type of safe space you're thinking, right?
Right.
Where nobody really talks about what they're truly feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's not safety.
It's not.
Not through my definition. And I think that if people really examine what I was saying there about integrity, truthfulness, consistency, reliability, and attunement, that is a definition of safety that is really about attachment. And I talk about that a lot in my work with people and with couples, but I see how it's true for men's work. And one of the most powerful things there is integrity. So for all the coaches and therapists and counselors and healers or spiritual mystics listening to this, you know, if you've got integrity, if you can cultivate that for yourself, that you are who you say you are, your actions follow through, you know, actions match words. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of wholeness there. You're not divided or split all over the place. Like you're mm-hmm. You got that integrity. That is a very powerful thing, and you can sell that, you know, for your entire life. Mm-hmm. And when guys learn to get that, doesn't matter what field or what, you know, specialization that they're in, it really makes an impact in their life. And they start to become someone that can be counted on. They start to become someone that can be counted on because they've learned how to work with other men and build trust and count on other guys mm-hmm. and be that rock and be that, you know, sort of grounded, reliable type of person. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you're there for everybody all the time, but that you've got that for yourself. And that's a really powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It ends up rippling out into your work and your romantic relationships, your family. It affects your whole life, just working on, integrity.
Yeah.
So, what is men's work?
Well, that is a big question. And, you know, I thought a lot about this year, and I even wrote a lot about it. And I ended up going in all kinds of different directions. So look at the historical context of the different branches of men's work, everything from sort of the seduction red pill community to mythopoetic movement, men going their own way. There's all these different things that have evolved out of men's work. And really how I think of it personally is men working together, men meeting together, it's men only, and they are bringing in the raw material, so to speak, of their life, which is their heart, mind, soul, psyche, however you want to think about it. And they're sharing with one another, and it's in the spirit of authenticity, the safety that I'm describing. And often in the spirit of being better and improving their circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think this is such a big open-ended question as to what men's work is in terms of men holding each other accountable and challenging one another when appropriate, listening, you know, when you need to, mm-hmm. being curious about one another. And I think a lot of that is about repairing some of the damage that's done mm-hmm. in society through work, through team sports, through the experiences we have in the cafeteria or the lunch, you know, the lunchroom, the locker room at school, and the hurt that's there between men, the hurt that's there between their relationship with their father or the elders in their life or their relationships with authority. These are all, you know, common popular themes that have deep roots, and it's worth examining. So men's work is an examination of those themes and many, many other things. And it's with other men. There's no TV, games, booze, snacks. And, you know, I think that's probably obvious to some people who are involved. And you've shared about it many times on the show, I'm sure, but that's at a high level how I would think about it. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways to describe what's going on. And I think a lot of people struggle to describe what men's work is and what's happening in these groups when guys who are not, you know, in the community, so to speak,
yep.
thinking like, oh, you have men's group tonight. What the hell is that? You know, mm-hmm. what's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's, I think everyone has their own definition of it. But one of the things I say sometimes to keep it really simple is men's work is inner work for men, you know, and it's a seeking inward. It's like taking that energy that we always, we focus outwards. Like, I got to do this. I got to buy this. I got to get this done. I'm going to go on this adventure. I'm going to pursue this romantic interest. I'm going to whatever, like the endless task list for guys. It's taking all that energy and focusing it inward for a specific amount of time, you know, however and it's doing it with other guys, you know, it's past focused sometimes, you know, we're digging into our past and, talking about, you know, maybe how our relationship with our father affected how we saw men as we were growing up, you know, the man, the representative for all men who was in our household, or maybe there was two, how did that affect how we saw all men? And as we grew into a man, how did those views then carry into adulthood? You know, if we resented certain things about our father and then we became adult like him, did those resentments carry over to ourselves? Mm-hmm. Were those resentments projected then on out into society, into government, onto corporations, business, the boss? Are we still carrying that stuff? You know, how did our relationship with our mothers affect how we see women, you know, and how we behave in romantic relationship? So, you know, digging into the past, doing this, like, what I call therapeutic work, may even be stuff that gets done in therapy. But it's not therapy, but it is therapeutic. You know, it's also present focused, you know, like, how do you show up here and now in the moment? Are you able to look me in the eye without flinching? Right. You know, how do I feel you or not? Do I feel like you're present? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Are you present? Or are you floating around somewhere above your head? You know, I feel your consciousness way out there. You know, we have exercises that work on that. And it's also future focused. Like, what do you want in your life? And what are you doing to get there? You know, a very common phrase in men's circle after a man shares is, what are you going to do about it? Or what are you doing about it? And do you want to make a claim here? You want to tell us you're going to do something? What are you going to do in the next week? We're going to write that down. We're going to come back to you next week and find out if you're doing it. Right? So there's this, you know, there's past, present, future. It's sort of involved in all three. And there's accountability. And, you know, I think in the best men's group, there's a consistency. It's not just like you drop in, you know, like in an AA meeting, you just come and go as you please, you know. I think the best men's groups, the guys really start to understand each other. You know, what I noticed in that early group that you and I were a part of was the men very quickly sort of honed in on what each guy's ego structure looked like, what his protective mechanisms were in his life and how those things were sort of holding him back, you know, how a man deflects, mm-hmm. you know, so that he doesn't have to look at his shit. We all have sort of an inner saboteur who stops us from becoming our best self. And the men in the group would get a peek at that, and they would sort of put their thumb on it, and then they would pin it down every once in a while. You'd see a guy get pinned down, and he didn't even really know what was going on, because the guys, in a way, had a better view on that part of him than he did.
Yeah, I think the feedback is really useful. And in that way, men's work, you know, is a mirror. I think that's a really common phrase that people use to describe all, you know, sorts of inner work and group work. But there is a reflection, you know, there is really something that you're getting back from being in that experience. So that's, you know, part of the, some of the fundamentals there is like listening, you know, listening to other people, learning how to listen for their bullshit or their truth, mm-hmm. and giving feedback when it's appropriate. And learning how to tell the truth about ourselves, you know, in our own life. And sometimes that requires opening up or learning how to notice sensations in the body and identify those things as our feelings and then communicate, you know, and express that to other people. And the the men's group's been a great, you know, learning zone for that, a great incubator, so to speak, for the human spirit, for myself.
There's also this piece that wasn't, I don't think you even mentioned it. I didn't mention it, which is around drawing on the power of myth, right? And, you know, you mentioned the mythopoetic men's movement, which was really started by like Robert Bly and some of his other, Michael Mead, I think. Mm-hmm. And they drew on some of these, you know, Robert Bly wrote a book called Iron John, which is essentially a book about a boy encountering this wild man out in the forest, and the civilized people were like, stay away from him, you know, and at one point he gets locked in a cage, and there's this whole narrative around actually the, in order for the boy to become the man, he must meet his own wild man and get to know him. And that story strikes a chord quite deeply for a lot of men. And when guys read King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, there's like two copies of it right behind you, because I like to just give that book out to people. It just hits people so hard. Mm. You know, this is a book that came out, you know, 40 years after young Carl Jung's work with Archetypes, that summarized that work in such a good way, where it focused just on four archetypes: the King, the Warrior, the Magician, and the Lover. And talked about the shadow aspects of those. There's something about that work, you know, this work of archetypes, that it really sort of speaks to men. You know, we can feel those archetypes in us. You know, I did a coaching call with a guy today where his mission on between last call and this call was to read that book. And he just finished it, because he was so stoked about it. He was like, oh my God, this is me. Like, when I'm listening to even some of these shadow aspects, I'm like, oh, this is like a character in me that it takes over. It is like, you know, Robert Moore talks in the book about how it's like being possessed, you know, like it's like a spirit takes you over, you know, these characters that come in. And there is an element in most good men's work, in my opinion, that also draws on archetypes and draws on myth. You have anything to add to that?
Well, I think it's a powerful book. And, you know, what I'm thinking about as you're speaking is really what our mentor, Phil, has often said, which is, you know, a lot of people want to be an awakened man. And in order to be an awakened man, you first have to be a man. Uh-huh. And what he means by that, and he might even be quoting another teacher, but what he means by that is accepting yourself, you know, accepting yourself, all sides of yourself, the light, the dark, the shadow, as it's, you know, being called, has been called for decades, and digging into that a little bit. And if you feel like parts of your life are not working, really to generate some awareness about why and how you're either causing or allowing that to happen, and starting to take responsibility for that. And for me, that's really, I think, encapsulates my experience in men's work, is getting comfortable with myself as a man, learning to accept myself, all parts of myself, and defining masculinity in sort of on my own terms, in my own way, that is not necessarily defined by pop culture or classic stereotypes, or, you know, that I'm the entrepreneur in the suit with a supermodel girlfriend and a Porsche and, you know, bulldog.
Yeah. Bulldog. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love that you just sort of spontaneously came to that around, you know, defining your own masculinity, because I was writing about that this week. You know, I was writing about, you know, what is masculinity and femininity, and my own journey in understanding that. You know, when I joined your group 6 years ago, it was on my goals list, on my wall, to study and discover what my masculinity is. And my girlfriend at the time saw that, and she bought me David Data's book, The Way of the Superior Man. Now it's on the shelf behind you. And that book sort of opened a door for me, because I was like, oh, here's this guy's perspective of what masculine and feminine is. And that's actually an energy, and you know, everybody has both inside them, and you know, each person has their own particular recipe. And then, you know, I read other authors and what they thought about masculinity. And, you know, some of the critiques of masculinity were front and center in society. Me Too happened pretty quickly. So there was a lot of talk about masculinity and about toxic masculinity and that kind of thing. Hmm. And so I formed my own relationship and beliefs around my own masculinity. And I really sunk into that and I feel grounded in it now. Like I don't, there's more to discover, of course, but I feel like there's a knowing, you know, and there's a place to focus. If I want to find what's called my masculine core, I know how to do that now. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I did not know how to do that 6 years ago. Like, what is that? Sounds like a concept more than an achievable thing, you know? And for now, that's an achievable thing for me. And that was, you know, I think that's a mythopoetic term. It was certainly mentioned a lot by our leader, our fearless leader, T. Misselberger. But yeah, every man has to find that for himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, these types of things are only found through intentional engagement in the process, you know, like if the only things you're concerned with is work, the acquisition of goods and doing your sports that you do and your life is full, you're not going to have a lot of space to understand what your masculine core is and how to you know, tap into that. You need to go and spend time with other men talking about this, feeling into this, you know, listening to other leaders and experiencing some of the work that they do.
For me, I think that a lot of guys benefit immensely from being a part of men's work, but some men actually naturally possess certain talents or qualities or abilities. And I think that has to do a lot with the family system and the way that you learn things from your parents and you embody things, you get things. So, for example, safety is a concept. Some family systems, you get that. You really have a sense of that. Your parents are attuned. Mm-hmm. There's consistency, reliability, and the things we mentioned before. There's that sense of integrity. And people benefit from that. A lot of people don't have that experience.
Right.
So for men, I think a lot of men didn't have that experience growing up. Some guys never met their father. Some barely know him, even though, you know, he was in the house growing up and they still have a relationship. There's that lack of depth. And I, you know, for our brotherhood, I don't know that it's for every guy. And I'd probably say that it isn't for everybody.
Right.
Because some people are not ready, they're not interested, or they feel like their life's on the right track. I don't think the path of awakening or personal development is going to be for everybody, but man, is it an incredible accelerator for an individual's growth if they're on that path and they want to make some change. A lot of guys come into our community just because they actually want to know more like-minded guys. They want to make friends. And what they end up getting is a lot more than that. Yep. Is they actually start experiencing powerful changes in their life and they begin to embody some of the things that you're talking about, which can be really difficult to do and difficult to learn when you're sifting through books or you know, other resources. Like online courses, like your course, is a great way to learn these concepts and to really make some change in your life and apply these principles because you're psychically transmitting the ideas. Like, it's really powerful. Like our online weekend that we're running, it really makes a difference for guys because mm-hmm. they're going to bring their stuff up, their unaired, unfinished business, the things that are not working for them. And it's this wonderful forum and container for them to work on that. And, you know, to take that further, you really can begin to accelerate your growth by actually being in a group, even if it's just online, because you start to embody and start to practice and start to live some of these principles. They're not just high off virtues that, you know, only certain people with millions of dollars and, you know, the right six pack can attain. These are principles and values that you can practice. And you begin to embody and it just becomes a natural way of being, not something you're faking or putting on, but you've just got it.
Yeah.
You know, and the way you look at people or celebrities or certain figures in society, say, wow, they really got something. They've got that talent or that charisma or that, wow, they got that voice. Mm-hmm. And they've practiced that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's been nurtured. Yeah. I know that you and I both, I know your childhood wounds and you know my childhood wounds.
My childhood was perfect.
You had a perfectly emotionally available family.
I love you, Mom.
Yeah, we're not going to get into ragging on our parents here. But we certainly grew up with some things to learn around around how to interface with our own emotions and our own darkness, our own shadow. And, you know, with men's work, I feel like there's two central components to it that they can sort of be done separately, but they're best done together. And I really saw this in AA as well when I was a part of AA 12-step programs, is there's the fellowship, the brotherhood, and then there's the work or the program, you know? And you can participate in the brotherhood and not really do the work, at least for a while. It's going to start to not work for certain guys that you're around if you're not really wanting to focus on integrity or honesty or speaking the truth, right? Or bring your energy to the circle, let's say. But you can, you know, build relationships with other guys and just have that uplifting reality, right?
I didn't realize there was different segments of AA. So there's
there aren't. Where I'm getting this from is that at one point when I went to a conference, a statistician came and he said, my mission over the last 10 years has been to figure out what is it about AA that works. And so he asked millions of questions to thousands of people. And what he came up with was, you know, this is as far as we have it right now, but basically from what we can see, the fellowship is a significant factor in people's change.
The community, the brotherhood.
Right. Yes. And the program is also the other significant point. Everything else wasn't statistically significant.
Wow.
Yeah. And
is AA successful statistically? Is it? Because I'm thinking about rehab programs, and some rehab programs are notorious for not really making change.
The trouble with that is how you define success, you know? Okay. Does it extend people's lifespans? No doubt, a lot of people, their lifespans have been extended by AA. But if you look at if your standard is just total sobriety, no mind altering substances, the numbers are going to go way down. And if you're looking at relapse, are we looking for long term, 5 years sober? How good is AA at creating those kinds of numbers? And did the person go through an intense loading period where they went through rehab first, or did they just go to AA on its own?
Okay. Yeah.
So there's all these different ways of measuring it. But it certainly seems to be a successful program when you go to the meetings and you see the people there who have many years sober. There's different meetings. There's some meetings where you go and everybody's taking their one day chip, you know?
Right.
It depends on what location of the city you're in sometimes, right? Hmm. But you know, and millions of people certainly still going to AA, you know, it's an organization that's still sort of thriving after 85 years now.
Wow.
1935 it started. So I really see the parallels there with the brotherhood. You know, there is this element of the fellowship and the connection with other men that just that is an uplifting force in a man's life. But there's also the work that we do, the exercises and the taking yourself to the edge and the stuff that we do in circle, and to some effect, the stuff that you can do on your own outside of circle, my course, or Connor Beaton's shadow work course, right? Where you're or Jordan Peterson's work, that's very a masculine work, looking at purpose and what you're doing with your life. But they're best done together. Mm-hmm. It's if you want the full package, you do the work and you do it with other men and you form that fellowship.
What was the name of his Jordan's program? Future authoring?
Authoring or self-authoring course?
Self-authoring.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So yeah. Okay. I think we've established the value of men's work. There's two words that I wanted to break down and get your opinion on. And the first one is integration. That word is, you and I have been talking about, we've been doing a lot of brainstorming about men's work in the past year and what is it that makes this movement tick and makes it what it is, and what really produces change in men, or what are we trying to do? And the word integration comes up a lot. And so, you know, what does it mean to you in the context of men doing their inner work?
Well, when you mention that word, I just think about spiritual growth junkies who go to a new training every week or every month. And, you know, it's kind of like going to see Tony Robbins for 7 days and paying 10 grand and flying into Florida and doing the workshop and then coming home and maybe not really doing anything with that, not reviewing your notes, not practicing what you learned, or following through on commitments. So, you know, integration, kind of like healing, there's this practical lens to sort of see that through, which is showing up every day and making choices that are good for you,
yeah,
versus what's familiar to you. And when we integrate things that we learn, we start feeling maybe different about ourselves, or we start noticing changes in our life over time, hopefully, right? If you've integrated some powerful teachings. So from a practical standpoint, it really is that choice, that practice, that showing up every day. And I mean, I love my days on the couch sometimes, watching a show or watching a few TV shows and chilling in the sauna, relaxing. But what I mean by that is, you know, what I'm saying is, like, it's great to relax, but my life is on track because I have integrated and continue to integrate teachings. And I enjoy reading audiobooks, taking online trainings, furthering and developing myself as a facilitator, as a therapist, as a partner, you know, for Alyssa. And I think that I'll be integrating things forever. You know, it's just like it's part of being a growth-minded individual. In terms of men's work, that integration might apply more to accountability, and it might apply more to what's actually being said in group and what you're doing about that in your life, whether you're following through on the things you say that you're going to do, whether you become a person of your word. And it can take time to do that. It can take time to practice that, or to decide that you're sick and tired of the pain and suffering that is your life. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. That was me. You know, that was me 6 years ago. I was sick and tired of my circumstances. And I actually didn't make any changes right away when I joined the men's group. I really sat with that. I sat with the discomfort. It was uncomfortable to go to those meetings, being broke and lost and not really sure what I was up to. And there were other men there that had many other parts of their life together. They were millionaires with successful businesses, but maybe they struggled in relationship, or they struggled in some other area of their life. So not to go on too much of a rant, but for me, you know, that's really what comes up around the subject of integration. And it's not something that, you know, you just get on day one of a men's workshop or experience. It's actually sort of a follow through and a sticking with it and showing up for yourself in that way, to have your own back in the way that maybe no one ever had that for you in the past, that your parents maybe didn't have that for you, or even your friends at school didn't have that for you, to really take a stand for yourself and what you want. And that's a big part of learning how to and staying with the process of integrating what you learn. Everything's a practice. Confidence is a practice. You get to take risks in life. Not that I'm going to drive around with no seatbelt on at, you know, 200 miles an hour through, you know, tight, narrow streets in the city, but take calculated risks and take leaps towards the things that I want in life. And when you do that kind of thing and you don't become a victim from your experience and make it, oh, I'm never going to try that again, you know, poor me, but you take the empowering road to say, okay, you know what, that didn't work out this time. And what are the lessons I can learn? And how can I use those lessons or those insights to better direct my future course of my life, and to, you know, keep going, to not give up on yourself. So, you know, it's a big concept, and I wouldn't consider myself to be a master at all. You know, some of this is really just my opinion and my thoughts on it, because I didn't take notes for this conversation.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. Yeah, you're really talking about putting yourself in the driver's seat in your life, you know, and there's something integral about that. You know, this concept of radical responsibility, you know, taking full responsibility for everything that happens in your life. You know, there's something integrated about that. There's something integral about that. You know, it's about follow through. You know, when you're talking about follow through, what I think about is this code that we have in our brotherhood. You know, we're all sort of allegiant or, you know, striving towards a code. And this code is called the 14-point code of the conscious warrior. The first one is make your word good. Speak the truth and follow through on what you say. You know, and if you're not sure, don't say you're going to do something. You know, there's all these elements of making your word good. And, you know, taking action in your life. Yeah. When you say you're going to do something, do it. Show up. Right? You give it 100%. Even if you fail, you can still be in integrity because you took action. You know, you gave it your all. You know, so there's this piece around action and making your word good. And, you know, really the word integrate is like a verb. It's like becoming integral, right? So it's like the action. It's the action of integrity.
Yeah,
you know, and for me also, there's this element of in the work that we do, at least, where it's almost like I use the word almost like reconstitution. You know, coming into a men's circle, most men have parts of themselves that they don't want to share, maybe don't even want to share with themselves, you know, parts of themselves that they have rejected. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys in modern society have rejected their anger. Anger's dangerous. And, you know, I had some times where my anger hurt me and other people. And so anger's bad. And so I reject that completely. And I have no relationship to it anymore. I can't tell you the amount of men that I've talked to have said, you know, like, I just don't have anger. I'm not an angry person, right? I'm not an angry person. Just this entire sector of emotional landscape just rejected, gone. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not a part of this. I'm out, dissociated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we work with that in our brotherhood. We do intentional embodiment of anger in a safe space, right? Where you're sort of held by the container of the men. You're not sort of held, you're completely held. And we get into anger. We really feel that. And we stand in that sort of fury and in that heat and just feel it and build a relationship to it in this sort of different environment where we're not expected to do anything with it other than just like see it, acknowledge it, own it 100%. Own your anger 100% rather than it owning you. And that process, as we do that over and over with guys, what I've seen is guys who all of a sudden are able to sort of take their life by the reins and ask for what they want or say no when they want to say no rather than saying yes, right? Or like defend themselves when they're being attacked or when someone's sort of pushing in on them. You know, you and I have seen countless guys who are sort of like pretty nice guys. After they get into the men's group and start doing some work, they have a situation where they assert themselves in a very stable way when it's out of character for them. You know, they come to the group and they tell the story like, man, I stood up to this person, or I said this thing to this random guy who was attacking a woman in Tim Hortons. And he just, you know, I managed to like totally diffuse the situation with my groundedness. And, you know, you can see the integration happening in a guy where the parts of him that he was like afraid to show, you know, were let out, and all of a sudden he's a more powerful person, you know, and that's, there's anger. There's also sex. There's, you know, secrets, even joy. Some of us have repressed our ability to just like be happy and be happy for one another, be happy for ourselves, move our bodies, and really sort of like be in it. And, you know, when you reconstitute that, you're a more full person. You know, mm-hmm. You can more fully express yourself. So integration for me is also this like process of like reclaiming parts of yourself that you've rejected or that have sort of been pushed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anger is such a useful emotion, but it's taboo, right? It's just not welcome. It's not welcome in society. It's not welcome in the home. And I think that's why a lot of people reject their anger or really learn to, suppress that because of the consequences. And, you know, we don't really see people embody and express anger in healthy ways. And often times at its extremes, at least for men, it's, you know, destroying oneself or destroying other people. And so there is integration of a calibration of, you know, their communication, their expression, their boundaries. Mm-hmm. And really there's this pent up energy coiled like a spring, you know, just ready to pop. And I think a lot of people go their whole lives with that kind of tension, you know, because they never really get an opportunity to practice something different or embody a different way of being. Mm-hmm. To say, you know, I'm angry. And, you know, I'm not putting up with that. I don't want to go. I'm not interested. No, thank you. You know, mm-hmm. or if you mm-hmm. do this again, you know, these are the consequences from a place of, like you're saying, in a respectful way, but protecting oneself and doing it in a way that's not with a flamethrower necessarily, but it's with a healthy, you know, sense of grounded boundaries, mm-hmm. Sense of empowerment.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about, destroying others or destroying self, right? And just to tap back in on the myth for a minute, you know, the warrior archetype can be easily painted as either one of those two. Mm. You know, the warrior is either pointing the gun at others, looking for someone to hurt, someone to shoot, or has a sword. You know, picture a sword, like pointing outwards, like, give me somebody to hurt, somebody to slice up. I'm ready to go. You know, and is always out there. The sadist. Right, it's known as the sadist, wants other people to hurt. The masochist has the sword pointed at himself and is just constantly cutting himself, mm. right? And martyr, you know. And when you're in that process of being between one of those two, it's hard to imagine that there's like a different way to be in the warrior. But what these guys talk about, Moore and Gillette in the book, is that those are both shadow expressions of the warrior archetype, and that the conscious warrior is more like a well-trained samurai who is deadly with the sword. He's very tapped into his warrior energy. However, he's not walking around looking for somebody to hurt, and he's also not masochistic. He's not hurting himself. You know, he's like well-trained, sharp. And you know, the samurai are a great example because they were also very balanced. You know, they had a dedication to aesthetics, right? And loyalty to a code. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one?
Forward gear.
Forward gear only. Yeah. Bushido, right? So anyways, yeah, that's the people sometimes don't understand that there's like there is a mature version of each one of those archetypes. And we get really caught up in the shadow and thinking like, well, what am I supposed to do? But like balance my sadism with my masochism? Like, no, you're shooting in the wrong direction. You should be shooting towards what's called the conscious warrior. Mm-hmm. And our founder T wrote this book, The Way of the Conscious Warrior, for this purpose, because it's something that men are searching for. Mm. Right. And he draws on, various, cultures and warrior cultures and sort of like cherry picks the goodness in each of them, and certainly doesn't shy away from the dark side either. Because like chapter two or the middle of the book is like it gets dark, man. He knows the dark sides of history, you know, and it's important to see that. It's important to show that we can't come into integration unless we recognize that darkness, right? That's the whole point here. Okay. Next one, alchemy. What does alchemy mean to you in the context of men's work?
Well, maybe I'll share just a little personal story about that. My dad, I think, is a great example of alchemy. And in a modern day sense, he really took the raw materials of his life He grew up in poverty in East Vancouver, and he grew up without a father, and the family was on welfare. And it wasn't a great situation. And there was a number of traumatic things that he experienced throughout his childhood and teenage years. And, you know, he didn't really have anything given to him, right? And so he really took the raw materials of that situation, which could be, you know, seen as shit or lead or, you know, cheap materials, and he made something of himself. And, you know, in some ways, I don't know exactly how he did that. He's taken part in some personal development trainings over the years, and he had a chance to take the early version of Landmark, which was Est when Werner Erhard was still involved. I later took Landmark and didn't know that my dad had taken the earlier training.
Oh, really?
An interesting point of conversation.
Yeah, I have a common language.
Yeah, but you know, he really took what he had there and he made something out of it. So you know, there's lots of myths around alchemy about turning lead into gold, turning you know a common resource, something that everybody has, into something precious and extremely valuable. And, you know, and there's some process to that about applying certain elements and pressure and cooking and, yep. and so on. There's different phases. Traditionally speaking, I'm not an expert on the rubedo and the negredo and you know, all the terms. But, you know, that's really, I think, sort of the essence of alchemy is working with what you've got and turning that into something, you know, precious and valuable. And I think in the sense of time, like so many of us think we're selling time, but we're really selling value. We're selling ourselves as a person. If you're a coach or a therapist, you're selling yourself in that way. There's lots of different paradigms for how that's done. But if you think about that, you know, if you're really selling value, can you become more valuable as a person?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, you can. And then, you know, you become more valuable and then maybe you charge a higher price or you make more money. And it's kind of the same thing like working for minimum wage at the grocery store. And then you maybe learn something that's valuable about that. You get some insight. Maybe you become a manager. You make more money. Mm-hmm. Or you want to get out of that whole game and you want to start your own business. But the point is there's something alchemic about that in itself. And it's not as ethereal and magical sometimes as the myths or the legends, you know, make it out to be. Beautiful stories, important, potent lessons and insights. But there is something there that's accessible to all of us, which is to make change with what we've got, change the world by changing ourselves, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about this in the context of like a men's weekend, right? Like, what if this is an equation? What is the starting thing, and what's the ending thing for alchemy? Like, we're sorting this out right now, right here. The first thing that comes to mind is like, what you start with is the truth of who you are, and you know, through bringing yourself, like through that cooking process, but through bringing the truth of who you are and stepping in 100% into a container that essentially cooks you and puts you under pressure and puts a level of consciousness on you. You know, consciousness is this like powerful energy force. You know, everybody feels that when they stand in front of a group of people, you know, and when you're, you know, we have a situation or an exercise where you basically spotlight a guy. He stands in front of the room or he sits in a chair, and you know, if we have a spotlight, great, you know, and then you sit the guys around him or in front of him like an audience, and then he shares about this issue that he's having, and then guys apply a certain kind of pressure to him and they challenge him in a certain way, and what sort of pops out of that honesty and that that feedback that comes in that sort of safe way, you know, there's like pressure, but it's coming with love, is like a new solution and a liberated way of being, you know?
Well, I mean, the pressure comes through being witnessed to a degree as well. You know, no one even needs to give feedback or say anything. It's just about witnessing the guy.
Totally.
And him kind of coming into his own truth. So a lot of men don't come into a weekend workshop or into a men's group with their truth necessarily. They actually might come in unclear about what that is, and you don't know what you don't know, and they might come in with a lack of awareness about how certain things are affecting their life. So that first stage might be more of an examination. It might be more of a assessment of what you're working with and where you're at and what you've got. Mm-hmm. And the truth sometimes of the situation comes out of that. A lot of the people that I work with, you know, they might see the situation as worse than it is or better than it is versus the reality of what it is.
Yeah.
The reality of where they're at. And that's a powerful thing, just to actually sit with and get with that truth for yourself. But okay, this is really how it is for me. You know, I don't like my life. Uh-huh. I'm, you know, in a serious amount of debt. I don't know how to get out of that. I don't have any friends. You know, I hate my parents. I don't feel like anybody supports me. And just actually getting into that examination of where you're at and how you feel. And there's so much there.
That's what you're coming with. Yeah. For sure. That's the raw material that you're coming with to an experience, mm-hmm. is that those realities. And
my life isn't working my life isn't working, right? This is the heaviest thing that I'm holding. This is my big complaint or criticism. Yeah. This is my story. Mm-hmm. And we've all got stories.
Mm-hmm. So you bring that, and then there's that process of cooking by putting consciousness on. I agree. Like, it doesn't even take a huge amount of skill from anyone in the group in particular to bring that heat or create the ingredients for that transformation to occur.
It takes some agreements. If you have some agreements in place, then you've got that container, mm-hmm. that, you know, place where that can happen.
And so then what you get out of it is this new perspective and this new sort of understanding on the issues that you brought and the raw material that you brought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alchemy is a really interesting one, because it's like this, it's this sort of ethereal, hard thing to understand from the beginning, mm-hmm. but I really like sort of exploring what it really means to transform, you know, and especially in the personal growth space, because, it can be, personal growth can become about, like, becoming someone else, right? Or like, well, why would I do personal growth work if there's like nothing really wrong with me? And, you know, I heard it said recently that it's not about becoming someone else, and it's not that there's anything wrong with you. It's that you have certain blocks that actually are in the way of your true essence coming through, you know? And I really understand that now, because, having experienced addiction in my early years, I now realize that, like, all of that, the addiction was a coping mechanism. It was this thing that was like layered on top of who I was. And I first needed to remove the addictive behaviors and the drugs out of my life. And then I had to do the work of emotional healing and, expressing the things I needed to express and feeling the things that I needed to feel. And in some ways that's still happening today, but it really was like the biggest part of the process was like a good 15 years, you know? Mm. And the end result of that is not that I was like a different person, but I was like more myself. You know, you hear that from people when they go through a change process that isn't a particularly culty, let's say, right? Where they're directing it themselves. They're like, oh, like, I didn't become a new person. I actually just became more myself. Mm. And the shit that I got rid of along the way was the stuff that was like holding me back. It was like layered onto me like paint or something.
Can you go back to this thing? Like, people, so you begin an example, someone saying, I'm not broken. Why do I?
There's this resistance to like personal growth work. Like, well, this doesn't really make sense, because like, there's nothing wrong with you. So why would you do personal growth work? Right.
Oh, I see what you're saying in terms of spiritual realization. Oh, like, I'm whole and complete. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
Oh, fine. I mean, that's great. I love that. If people are genuinely there, like, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
You really have cultivated, you know, a sense of acceptance, and, you know, it's kind of like a mastery, mm-hmm. if you're really happy with your life. So I wouldn't challenge those people at all. I say, fantastic, you know, good for you. And just keep on living the dream and celebrating yourself and living well and whatever you want. Yeah. But most people are not happy. Most people, I think, are not fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I think most people are not enthusiastic about their life, particularly in the pandemic. There's a lack of enthusiasm. There's a lack of safety in society. If you look at the definition that I gave earlier, we don't have safety in society. Mm-hmm. We're not under imminent threat. There's not asteroids falling from the sky. The government isn't coming to raid my house. I'm not under a life threat. But there's no truth to a degree. Mm-hmm. There's no integrity for sure, because the people in charge aren't following through on what they commit to. No consistency, you know, some reliability to a degree, but these things are missing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a many, many challenges are going to come out of this pandemic, which have been illustrated by people that are much smarter than me and are experts in their field. But there's some serious challenges. And so the Men's Alchemy Weekend, your course, Personal Growth as a Whole, a great book, these things are available to people. So if you're not happy, if you're not lit up, if you're not enthusiastic, that doesn't need to be a metric for you to beat yourself up and get into more self-loathing. It'd be an opportunity for you to make change.
Yeah.
And, you know, I or you, I'm not telling anybody about how they feel. Just evaluate yourself. You know, where are you at? Just be honest about that. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make change, there's lots of people out there that are willing to support you with that. And our brotherhood, for a very affordable fee, like we're not a high-priced personal growth machine. This isn't a $1,000, $10,000 training. This is, we're talking about a couple hundred bucks.
Yep.
So for that 10-hour weekend that we're doing on November 19th, 20th, and 21st, for all the men listening, I mean, that's a great opportunity to get involved, to get your batteries charged, so to speak, and to, you know, take something away from that experience.
And it's worldwide. It's on Zoom. And we've done a few of these weekends so far, and we're always trying new things. We're going to try some new things with this particular weekend. Lots of embodiment. There's certainly going to be lots of sharing, lots of men sharing in groups and getting to know one another and going deep and doing a lot of the work that we do in person, but also lots of embodiment. We're going to have people moving their bodies, expressing themselves in different ways. And you know, we just released this like really cool little promo video with our friend Joel Chernick, who's like dancing like a maniac in my living room. And the tag, you know, when he's in the living room, it says feel alive. And it's very much, this type of work is very much about feeling alive. Like if you're feeling numb in your life, or like you're just like one directional, you're only focused on one thing, this type of thing is exactly what you're probably needing in your life to wake you up and feel fully alive. You know, wake up all of your centers, not just this like sort of monochrome, single focus thing. You know, some guys work 60-hour work weeks because they're trying to build something, and that has, it takes its toll, you know, it takes its toll on a person's life. And, it's only sustainable for a certain amount of time. You have to check back into yourself, your whole being. And this type of thing is built for that.
Yeah.
So, thanks for speaking to the Alchemy Weekend that we're running, November 19, 2021. It's you and me and, you know, a couple hundred men, hopefully.
Yeah. And coming back to the comment that, you know, I sort of asked you about, if a man identifies as broken, and by the way, these events are for anyone who identifies as a man. So this is an inclusive community. Your race, your gender, your sexual orientation, your religious affiliations, you know, those things are not criteria. Those are not prerequisites. This work is for people that identify as a man. If you identify as a man, this is for you. And there's a point in my journey in this brotherhood where I didn't think that I even had to say that. I thought it was obvious because of all the men, the different cultural representations and people from all walks of life that are part of that. That to me, of course, is for everyone. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say that here loud and clear, because I'm beginning to realize that that's an important thing for many people. If they identify as queer or bi, you know, there are some communities, and ours may be included at times, that they might wonder, okay, am I welcome here? Because I see, you know, a bunch of guys that maybe there's no, they're not stating it. So I just want to say it here for the record.
Is this heteronormative, right?
Right.
It is important to say. It's important to say. We don't have it. That's not front and center on our website. One day we will make that more of a prominent statement. It is there, but it's worth stating, you know. I you know, just to speak to gay men in particular, you know, last year I started working with a gay man and,
coaching.
Yes. Right. And we started talking about, men's work. And he was like, whoa, you know, like, I'm going to start just with you, buddy. You know, like, I'm, that sounds like pretty intense. Like, you got to understand, like, I don't have straight friends.
Mm.
You know, that hasn't worked out well for me in my life. Hmm. So I got some problems with that. And one day we're doing a session, we're walking out in the park, and we bumped into two guys from my group.
Mm.
And we stopped to talk to them for a while. And I was like, these guys are in my group. And a couple weeks later, we had an open house, and he was like, I think I'm going to come to your open house. And we came to the open house, and he was like, of course, he's got radar, right? So he was like looking around. He's like, there's other gay guys here, you know, like, okay, I'm starting to feel warmer to this. You know, he felt the warmth of the stories that were talked about. And then we talked about it. He's like, I'm scared, but I think I need to do this. And he joined. And long story short, like, it was possibly the biggest movie ever made in the last decade in his life. You know, like the what it opened up for him in resolving his issues with other men, you know, unique to him. So for me, that particular guy, and you know who you are, listen to this, that particular guy is a beautiful story of how, like, and I had to sort of coax him a little bit to, like, to get in here, you know. But I just love how it turned out, and he's a testament to the fact that this work is for all men who identify as men.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we've got leaders and executives in our organization that are identify as queer, bi, straight, and I'm sure other identifications in there.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, you know, I think it's really more about the willingness and the open-mindedness to just be involved and show up and keep agreements. That's really the most important thing. And then that's the criteria, right? Can you show up on time? Can you be here every week? And are you willing to share about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a wonderful thing that we've built that and are continuing to foster that culture. And it's important that men know that, you know, we're here. And there's other organizations out there, but... Yeah.
Let's go, man. Here we go. We're moving into whatever our next phase is with the Samurai Brotherhood. We're 500 men now. Maybe next time you and I talk, we'll have 2,000. But I look forward to continuing to build with you and to grow in my own leadership, to watch you grow. And it's been a blessing, man. Thanks for coming on the show and for sharing words with me, having a good conversation. How can people find you? You're a coach. You do relationships. You do men's work. How can people sign up for your coaching?
Easy. NickSolacek.com. Solacek is spelled S-O-L-A-C-Z-E-K. Ben will have it in the show notes, I'm sure, and in the title of this. So you can look me up there. You can find me on Instagram and through the Samurai Brotherhood.
All right. Yeah. And we're doing this event on November 19th. SamuraiBrotherhood.com is the site where you can find tickets to that. And I think that's about it, man. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate you. And thanks for taking the time to share your wisdom with all the people who are listening here.
Yeah, absolutely. Congrats on the launch of your course, The Integrated Man. And I'm glad that guys are finding that as a kind of a portal to get into this work and to learn more about themselves and potentially get involved to the groups. So it's amazing. And I appreciate you as well.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Integrated Man is on my website, evolvingman.com. Check it out. Enjoy. It's like it's a 5-module, 29 video, you know, we call it a 5-week course as my version of an intro to men's work. Men's work 101. Covering many of the subjects that you and I talked about here today. So the resources are out there for you men who want them. All right, until next time, folks.